This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars episode number 10 was recorded on May 28th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Luke Groman from Forest for the Trees joins me today. And Luke, you know, recently on the main Macro Voices podcast, I had Simon White from Variant Perception, and he told us that their view is that something has got to give here with stocks, bonds, and the dollar all high. He thinks it's the dollar, and that immediately made me think of you because, needless to say, if it is the dollar that's about to give out here, that would trigger a scenario you've been talking about for years. Did you catch that interview, or what are your thoughts in general with respect to that outlook?
You know, hi, Eric. Thanks for having me on. I did not catch that one yet, so it's on my my queue of podcasts to listen to, but I would say that sentiment makes sense. A good friend of mine said recently that he thinks it's possible that both stocks and bonds have it right with low yields and high valuations, and that it's the FX markets, and specifically the dollar, that might have it wrong. And given what's transpired in the past few weeks, I'm increasingly inclined to think that's right.
Okay, what about the last few weeks in specific has caused you to come around to that thinking? Because you were tactically long the dollar, at least on a short-term basis.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it started out with Fed funds rates, or FFR, moving above interest on excess reserves, which I'll abbreviate as IOER. But so Fed funds over IOER is sort of an esoteric money market plumbing issue. But in short, it's something that should never happen. And it suggests that the Fed is losing control of the price of money in the United States, which, of course, should never happen. And so Fed funds went above IOER on March 20th, and it stayed there. And initially, there was a discussion that it could be tax-related since you're moving large amounts of money around the U.S., of course, and dollars coming and going. But tax season came and went, and Fed funds remained above IOER. You know, then there were those that thought it could be fixed by the Fed making a technical adjustment, cutting IOER, which counterintuitively should drive FFR back below IOER, but 4 weeks ago, the Fed cut IOER, and the cut did relieve stress a bit, but ultimately, Fed funds remains above IOER, where it should never be. And so the only ways to fix this are for the Fed to supply more dollar liquidity soon, whether that's swap lines, whether that's rate cuts, whether that's more QE. And I get the sense that this dynamic is not that well understood. And what's really not well understood is the underlying core issue that's causing all of this.
Okay, you got my attention. What is the underlying core issue that's causing all this?
At its core, it's rising U.S. government deficits, which are increasingly crowding out the U.S. private sector because deficits are structurally rising while foreign central banks aren't buying treasuries, and they haven't for 5 years. And foreign private sector investors are effectively being paid not to buy or roll treasuries by prohibitively high FX hedging costs really ever since October of last year. And so this Fed funds moving above IOER in late March is a real-time indicator or pressure gauge that the U.S. is heading towards a fiscal crisis.
Okay, let's translate this to market implications. What does this mean?
Well, ironically, from a purely mechanical standpoint, for as long as Fed funds remains above IOER, all else equal, that's bullish for the dollar, bearish for risk assets, broadly speaking, because it's a sign that the U.S. government is creating a worsening dollar shortage within the United States' own banking system to go along with the euro-dollar shortage globally that Jeff Snyder continues to highlight in his great work. Now, critically, Fed funds moving above IOER will only be dollar positive and risk asset negative for as long as the Fed is willing to lose control of the price of money in the U.S. Now, personally, I don't think they're going to be willing to lose control of the price of money in the U.S. for very long. And so then we get into a sort of reflexive question, which is, if everyone thinks the Fed won't be willing to lose control of the price of money in the U.S., then what is mechanically a dollar positive should reflexively begin to drive positioning the other way in expectation of dollar liquidity or a weaker dollar as the Fed's forced to inject dollar liquidity, in effect, to fund the U.S. government's deficits. And so this sets up an interesting dynamic. In most countries, fiscal crisis is negative for risk assets, but in the U.S., that'll only be the case if the Fed decides to permanently lose control of the price of money. You know, given that controlling the price of money in the U.S. is their primary reason for existence, you know, our view is they're not going to decide to lose control of the price of money for very long. And if that's the case, then it's hard for me to get too excited about the dollar from this point.
Okay, so what do you think the Fed's going to do instead?
I think the Fed's going to be forced to cede control over the quantity of money in order to control the price of money. Basically, in order to regain control of the price of money or Fed funds rates, the Fed's going to be forced to begin growing their balance sheet again much sooner than most people think, and likely permanently. And given this dynamic, what Lael Brainard at the Boston Fed said 3 weeks ago was, I thought, critically important.
Okay. Well, for our listeners, how about refreshing our memory on what Lael Brainard said 3 weeks ago?
You mean you don't have it? You don't have it just down there, huh?
Oh, of course I do. I know everything. But just for the listeners who might not have that memorized, Luke.
Of course, of course. No. So what she said, and I'll read two quotes. The first is directly from Brainard. This was May 8th. Under this policy, the Fed would stand ready to use its balance sheet to hit the targeted interest rate, but unlike the asset purchases that were undertaken in the recent recession, there would be no specific commitments with regard to purchases of treasuries. And the Market Watch article from then said that Federal Reserve Governor Lael Brainard on Wednesday became the second U.S. central banker to talk about the possibility of targeting longer-term interest rates as a new tool to combat the next recession. It's actually not so new. The last time the Fed conducted such a policy was during World War II to keep down the costs of funding the war. Now, for us, we thought these were huge comments, hugely important comments, especially knowing that Vice Chairman Clarita said something similar earlier this year. And knowing that the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee put out a piece in the first quarter of this year noting that the U.S. government might have to get increasingly creative with its TIPS offerings, its inflation-protected security offerings, just to keep growing U.S. private sector demand for treasuries.
Okay, so why specifically was her announcement so important?
Well, it suggested to me that the Fed's beginning to realize that they're soon going to have to eject dollar liquidity, whether that's swaps or cutting rates or growing their balance sheet, with unemployment at 60-year lows and with stocks still at or near all-time highs.
Why would the Fed do that, given the economy is still relatively strong?
You know, even if we set aside that the U.S. economy, I would say, is now slowing, the preponderance of the evidence would suggest, the reason they would do this is because what the Fed's going to be forced to do has nothing to do with what the U.S. economy is doing and everything to do with financing the U.S. government, particularly given that the U.S. government is now in a trade war / Cold War, depending on who you ask. And you know, it's interesting that Brainard referred to a policy that was last used during World War II to fund the cost of the war. You know, back then, the Fed said, we'll buy every 10-year treasury the U.S. government issues at 2.5%, no questions asked. And we've long been saying that this day was coming, and I'm pretty sure we highlighted on a prior Macro Voices appearance. So you can imagine our surprise that when we heard the Fed talking about having to do this even sooner than we thought it would come.
Okay, so let's net this down, Luke. What's the bottom line for investors as you look across markets?
Yeah, I think the punchline, Eric, is that U.S. deficits are likely going to force the Fed to inject dollar liquidity in increasing amounts, likely no later than early 2020, and quite possibly sooner. And effectively, they're going to be doing this in order to end a worsening dollar shortage in the U.S.'s own banking system that's being caused by structurally rising U.S. deficits in the face of an ongoing foreign buying strike of treasuries by both foreign central banks and by foreign private sector investors. And so the Fed will be doing something, or may very well be doing something, it hasn't done since World War II, which is targeting the yield curve effectively to directly finance the U.S. government. And it'll likely be doing this with asset markets at or near the highs and unemployment at 60-year lows. And I think when you then take a step back and say the last time this was done was in World War II, what happened to assets? You know, 10-year treasuries rallied nominally, at least near term, and stayed, you know, pinned under that 2.5% yield number. But for 9 years, risk assets rose 5x against treasuries over those next 9 years, and CPI rose 4x versus 10-year treasuries over the next 9 years. And so, you know, basically, you know, the real value of the dollar got creamed in terms of stocks and inflation, you know, although the dollar probably did perform, you know, far better than some currencies during World War II, I would suspect. So fascinatingly, all of this is happening as most market commentators are hyper-focused on dollar shortage everywhere else but here. But this Fed funds moving above IOER and persisting there, even after tax season, even after attempts to get it back within the range, is a pretty clear sign that the dollar shortages that analysts are rightfully noting everywhere else have now hit the U.S. as well. And So those that believe the dollar can run for a long time to come, you know, to our eyes are effectively making a bet that the Fed will decide to basically permanently lose control of the price of money in the U.S. And we just don't think that's a good bet. You know, we think the Fed is going to cede control over the quantity of money or their balance sheet in order to control the price of money, likely by no later than early 2020. And when they do, we suspect that rates will do exactly what the Fed wants them to do, which is, you know, wherever they want to pin them is where they'll go. And so you could see rates down. And we think risk assets will likely do quite well. And so stocks up. And, you know, my guess is that the dollar probably won't like this very much, which is, you know, interesting given the hyper bullish position on the dollar to positioning in markets on the dollar today. So given all of this, we're still overweight risk assets in the U.S. You know, we're kind of starting to prefer a slant towards value versus growth, you know, just given the potential for the dollar to weaken. But, you know, and we still like gold, we still like Bitcoin. And so that's how we would boil it down across markets.
Well, Luke, I can't thank you enough for a fantastic interview. But before I let you go, please tell our listeners who might not be familiar a little bit about what you do at Forest for the Trees and what they can expect to find at fftt.com.
Yeah, absolutely. So we, in short, aggregate a large amount of publicly available data in a unique manner in an attempt to identify developing economic bottlenecks, because that's been our experience. That's where excess returns accrue to areas positioned to benefit from or be hurt by those bottlenecks. So that is what we do. Like you said, you can go to our website, check it out. There's a number of different product offerings. And the most recent one we rolled out last year called Tree Rings, which is, you know, if you like this sort of quick, hard-hitting sort of summary that you're featuring here, Eric, you know, people would really like the Tree Rings. It's 10 interesting things we've seen during the week with quick synopsis and chart, and we've been getting really good feedback on that. So check that out at fftt-llc.com if you're interested.
Well, I certainly recommend that our listeners do so. And folks, stay tuned. We've got Chris Cook, Pat Hemsworth, and Ole Hansen coming up on this week's Energy Week. And we've got Danielle DiMartino Booth in an all-star interview coming up on Friday morning, in addition to our regular Thursday night Macro Voices podcast. For Macro Voices, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.